we're going to be talking about depression with Dr. Harry Zoll, who is a psychiatrist at the Institute of Pennsylvania Hospital. We've all been unhappy. We all experience unhappiness, and I'm sure we all experience depression. But is there a difference there between unhappiness and depression?
Well, the difference is not very clearly defined, even amongst men who specialize in treating these disorders. Perhaps a good model to turn to initially in looking at this general spectrum of bad feeling states would be a grief or mourning reaction. I think most people, if not having had one of those themselves, have had relatives or friends who have lost loved ones and have gone through a significantly painful period after that, in which there is a great sense of sadness and despair, and often physical symptoms will appear during that period of time. That is an expected and felt to be a normal, reasonable, and appropriate reaction to a loss of a significant object, and would not be classified as an abnormal state that would necessarily need treatment. Putting that reaction in the center of things, one that we can refer to, and then looking at, well, you use the word unhappiness. I think that it's part of an intrinsic part of man's existence to have days when the inevitable frustrations of one's ambitions, one's pleasures, one's desires are going to be encountered, and consequently there is going to be shifts in mood, so that people do have blue days, unhappy days. Very common examples of this are the mild instances of unhappiness that a woman feels in anticipation of her menstrual period. In most cases, they're not profound. They tend to let up within hours or a day or two, and they may not even occur with all periods. But they are unpleasant. At this time, we don't necessarily consider that relatively mild reaction in advance of a menstrual period pathological, and certainly not necessarily in need of treatment.
But we use the word depression all the time. I mean, you know, how many times do you say to someone, or does someone say to you, "I'm really depressed today"? Are we misusing the term? I mean, is depression, to you, a psychiatrist, a clinical term that implies a pathological form of behavior or emotion?
Yes, I think that there is a semantic problem here, in that much like edible complexes and slips of the tongue, words that have slipped out of the medical and psychiatric literature into the lay press tend to get picked up, and perhaps it's not fair to say abused, but that they are used in different contexts and with different having different implications depending upon the circle of people who are discussing the term. In common, somewhat loose usage, depression is applied to states that we would consider unhappy, sad, moody, down periods, but that would not have the same significance to a physician as a clinical depression, which actually represents a constellation of symptoms.
What are some of the symptoms that indicate to you that someone is clinically depressed?
Someone who's clinically depressed will primarily be suffering from an altered mood, and that is, rather than having a either a neutral, calm, composed, perhaps happy, enthusiastic frame of mind, attitude, a different feeling tone will evidence itself within the patient. And I might add that there is a difference between depressive behaviors, that which is expressed on the outside, and that which someone is feeling inside. What I'm referring to is what is a subjective feeling state, very akin to physical pain, something that isn't easily measured but can be described often vividly by patients. That's the sine qua non of a clinical depression. The mood is one of dejection, sadness, despair, despondency, sense of hopelessness, a rather pessimistic, negative view of the future.
That too, we all go through times of that, but mm-hmm. they hopefully don't last too long. If you are seriously depressed, clinically depressed, is this a kind of constant state of feeling that only subsides on certain days?
Well, to distinguish, first of all, the distinction between what is a clinical depression as opposed to what someone might call just my usual blue day or two is not very distinct. It isn't a black and white kind of thing. The difference might be the decision of someone to go see a doctor about it as opposed to not going. If they don't go, it could be called just part of my lifestyle, part of the way I am. Once one sees a physician, then it becomes a clinical syndrome, even though qualitatively, descriptively, it's the same. I would say, though, that there are guidelines, and that is a shift in mood in the direction in which we've been referring, and that is a sense of despondency and sadness, which is intense, which interferes with one's day-to-day activities, which might be house cleaning, doing the wash, cooking, if one is working, attending to office routines. One's recreational activities become not as pleasurable as before. If that feeling, because of its intensity, begins to rob one of those ordinarily gratifying experiences, and especially so if it persists over a period of weeks, relatively unabated, then I think it would be fair to say that one has crossed the demarcation point of a clinical depression, something that is not just going to subside and is momentary or mild.
It seems to me that some of this has to do with the way you view your life and your reason for living. What I'm saying is that some people hold the philosophy that life is a hard struggle. It's full of work. It's full of unhappiness, and that's the way it is. One accepts the hardships and possible day-to-day miserableness that one has to put up with, whereas others take a more lighter view of life, that life should have, you know, many more entertaining moments in it, that one should be fulfilled in their job, with their family, and relationships with friends and lovers. So I guess whether you are upset by periods of depression would depend somewhat on what your worldview is, what your philosophy of life is.
Very definitely. In fact, I would say that there's somewhat of a circular reasoning process there. Someone who is more prone to the, shall we say, pleasure-oriented approach to life would be likely someone who would not experience at least certain kinds of depression, and that is because of factors related to genetics, inborn temperament, experiences, learning experiences within the family. That person has not been computerized to, in terms of value system, in terms of what one finds rewarding, one's orientation, etc. One has kind of gotten past or is not a victim or vulnerable to or as vulnerable to at least certain kinds of depressions if one is so oriented. So I would say that that orientation, and that is more pleasure-oriented, would be somewhat of a protective buffer against experiencing, well, what we call neurotic kinds of depressions. Not necessarily some of the more severe kinds of depressions, but that orientation would, as opposed to the person who is not as much pleasure-oriented or in one's list of values, the importance of a work experience, hard work, having to go through strife, struggling, much the orientation of, I think, the average family, middle-class family 25, 50 years ago, where the primary concern was really survival, and of secondary interest, for very practical reasons at that time, was a source of pleasure and fulfillment and having fun. In today's culture, of course, there's a great difference.
Well, is there more depression, do you think, in today's culture because fun is stressed and it's sometimes a hard thing to achieve in spite of the fact that you think you ought to have it?
Yes, my answer, my belief is it is, in fact, in its different forms. We are seeing, I believe, more evidence of depression, although perhaps in different forms than before, and a lot of the reasons relate to sociological factors. We're living in a century where technological advance has been profound, where the family unit has become much modified, the role of women, of course, changing tremendously, the role of the father in the family changing. The sense, one's ability to sense that one's individual effort in the overall scheme of things is making a great deal of difference has been minimized in the last post-World War II years. Consequently, people are left with a sense of themselves that is unclear. It's more vague. They often do feel that it doesn't matter very much what my contribution is, because things seem to be so massive, so superstructured, so computerized, that the input of an individual doesn't seem to make much difference. And I think that predisposes to depression.
Now, those are social functions of of depression. There's been a lot of talk of the possibility of schizophrenia being a biochemical reaction or possibly an inherited trait. Is there anything related to that in terms of depression? Any talk of that as possibly being an inherited state of being or state of mind?
Mm-hmm. Yes, very definitely. First of all, perhaps I could discuss briefly some of the different clinical kinds of depression, which, again, has been an area that is now in the process of being worked out, but is still not very clear at all because of the myriad of varieties of depression. It appears in many different forms. At the present time, we tend to make a distinction between what are considered to be milder expressions of depression, milder in the sense that they are not as incapacitating as the more severe kinds, even though they may be more enduring and very painful, nevertheless. And these are the so-called neurotic depressions. In contrast to this kind of depression would be a psychosis, a psychotic process in which it is felt that a major disturbance in the mood state has occurred, a psychotic depression. An example of that would be a manic depressive kind of illness. Now, the genetic work that has been done, and there has been a great deal of it, has focused primarily on the more severe kinds of depression, severe in presentation, people who are more profoundly depressed, more non-functional, more suicidal, who have more physical complaints accompanying the mood disorder, physical complaints of the kind that you would commonly see would be insomnia, difficulty in sleeping that endures, persists night after night, significant disturbances in appetite, weight loss, a loss of sexual interest, the loss of interest in usual recreational pursuits, changes in bowel habits, and so on. When those physical changes accompany the mood change, we consider a profound we consider that there is likely a metabolic or biological process that is accounting for these changes in those kinds of depressions, which appear more clearly to be biological in origin. Genetic work has been done, and it appears that there are inherited factors, that families do suffer more from this kind of depression.
How does someone who's researching this go about telling which is influencing which, whether your state of mind is influencing your body reactions or whether your biochemistry is producing a depressed state of mind? How can you tell?
Well, from a research standpoint, of course, that's very important. In practical day-to-day terms in treating someone, it is of lesser importance, because there's no question, I think, in anyone's mind that there is an interaction between inherited factors and one's environment, and that an unfavorable marriage of genetics and environment will predispose to depressions. It is true that there are some instances of depression, and I might say certain manic depressive illnesses, which occur in people who, in between depressive periods and high periods, manic periods, seem to be rather well adjusted, as opposed to other kinds of depressive illness, where even in between the acute depressive phases, the individual is having fairly significant maladjustments. And the genetic factors in those cases are not as clear as in the manic depressive. So it is always a blend, at least I believe, it's always a blend of some inherited factor. For all practical purposes, it may be that we don't know our genetic, our advances in understanding the genetic expression. These X factors, what predisposes one, are not as far along as we would like.
So if it's possibly a blend of both biochemical and psychological dysfunctions, then I imagine the treatment would try to concentrate on both areas through possibly drugs and psychiatry, psychology.
Some kind of psychotherapeutic intervention in contrast to just a pill. Of course, you know, just giving someone a pill has its psychological implications. So that one is, it's hard to avoid whenever two people are interacting. It's hard to avoid some kind of socio-psychological implications of that interaction.
Well, what are the drugs that are prescribed for clinically depressed people, and how do they function within the body? The major drugs.
I might say that in general, drugs, so-called antidepressant drugs, have been more effective for the more severe kinds of depression. Perhaps a better word than severe would be the more biologically or apparently biologically caused depression.
The person who's losing weight and who's unable to eat.
Mm-hmm. That would be...
Who's tired all the time, would that be part of it?
Could be, although there are some people who apparently don't have prominent biological causes of a depression who do also have that symptom, and that is a great deal of fatigue. But someone who is severely depressed, who has undergone changes in sleep pattern, eating pattern, weight changes, bowel habit changes, perhaps sometimes changes in the texture of the skin, changes in one's daily biological rhythms, waking and sleeping times will be, you know, interrupted. That kind of person who we consider as having a biologically caused or primarily biologically caused depression would be the one who would most likely respond to antidepressant drugs. This would be in contrast to the so-called neurotic depressive, someone who is not experiencing that kind of profound change, but is still mood-wise suffering.
What are the drugs?
Well, there are two broad categories of, well, actually more than two, but there have been traditionally two antidepressant drugs, one so-called tricyclic group, and the other a monoamine oxidase inhibiting group of antidepressants. And these are drugs that are specifically indicated for especially the biological kinds of depressions. But there are many exceptions to this.
Okay, a drug that comes to my mind that I know you've done research about is lithium.
Right.
What kind of drug is it, and how does it work in the body?
Lithium is not, and again, this is a matter of opinion. My personal opinion is that lithium, I don't consider it to have the value for an acute depressive illness as the other drugs that I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
It can be. Lithium's primary indication is for acute manic illnesses, in which case it is often in excess of 80% effective cases of manic illnesses, and also very effective in preventing recurrences of both manic and depressive illnesses. However, its usefulness once one is depressed in clearing up that depression is, it's a controversial issue. Apparently there are some people, so-called lithium responders, who do benefit from it in a depression, but it has not been a terribly impressive drug in clearing up acute depressions.
Now, the other drugs that you mentioned, whose names I'm at a loss to pronounce again, do they act in the body as a speed kind of drug would in terms of increasing the rate of body functions? Or do they work in a completely different area than that?
Probably there is overlap between a speed drug, an amphetamine, and the effects of tricyclic antidepressant. They're the most commonly used antidepressant drugs. I shouldn't say that. Probably the most common antidepressant drugs, when drugs are being used, are the tranquilizers, the Valium and Librium group.
Well, they're tranquilizers, and you're already depressed. Do they just calm you down, take off the nervousness, and allow you to relax further?
Yeah, we get into the problems here in labeling, and
uh-huh.
That is many people who are tense, anxious, uncomfortable, nervous, have vague aches and pains, who don't visit psychiatrists, they visit family physicians, in many instances, good reason, they're given tranquilizing drugs of this kind, and in many instances they improve a great deal. But these are not considered technically antidepressant drugs in the same sense that a tricyclic drug such as tofranil, a fairly commonly known drug, is. Tofranil does seem to have some actions much like an amphetamine drug. However, it does not produce a kind of a false high. It doesn't get your adrenaline going in a sudden and acute manner, following which you crash and then often have a depression or depressed phase when a patient is using amphetamines.
If you kind of learn to rely on drugs in order to change your behavior from a depressed state, can you ever wean yourself from the drugs that you're taking? I mean, if it's treating a symptom, if it's treating a biological deficiency, how do you get off of it?
Well, one benefit of, again, the formerly antidepressant drugs is that they don't have a speed-like effect. And that is, if a normal undepressed person took
I'm not talking about a physical addiction to the drug. I'm talking about a psychological need for it. If it's not really changing your psychological frame of mind, but is working either to treat a biological dysfunction or to compensate for some kind of, you know, biological function, then it seems like you'd always need to take it.
In some instances, that's true. For example, lithium. If someone has had a history of frequent, recurrent, manic, depressive illnesses, and the intervention of lithium, which is an entirely different kind of drug, seems to be able to call a halt to those recurrences, or at least reduce their frequency and intensity, it may be that certain people should be on that drug the rest of their lives.
Now, I'd imagine that there's a large amount of difference between psychiatrists who treat depressed patients as to when drugs should be dispensed to them, if at all, and from a consumer's point of view, someone who's consuming psychiatric care, how do you, what kind of information can you use to judge whether you think that you should be taking the prescription that was given to you by a doctor, when perhaps another doctor, who has subscribed to a different theory, would not be, prescribing drugs for you?
Well, that's difficult, because in answering that question, I suppose my own biases would get involved. I would say that I think it's fair and not exaggerated to say that someone who has had, who has been troubled over a long period of time, let's say 6 months or more, 3 months or more, with a very bad, disabling kind of depression, without there being immediate environmental reasons for it, and that is if there's been a reaction to an illness and in the family, and it appears that when that illness is cleared up or when financial problems are relieved, the depressive illness would be relieved, perhaps with some exceptions in that area. If someone has really been disabled with a depressive illness, that first of all, it behooves that person to see a physician. Also, I would think that if one visited a psychiatrist and was being treated without drugs for 3 or 4 weeks, and experienced the same kind of symptoms, no relief whatsoever, that it would be appropriate to question the psychiatrist as to why a drug is not being tried. There are, unfortunately, instances where drugs, despite bad depressions, we still haven't reached the point where we have a drug that is appropriate for all depressions. So I think for severe depressions where therapies, psychotherapy in whatever form, group, individual psychotherapy, behavior therapy, has not helped, and a reasonable period of time, a month or two, have gone by without seeing any benefits, in that instance, I think a trial on a drug would be indicated.
But likewise, if you're taking a drug and don't notice any real change in your feelings, then perhaps you should stop taking it, if it doesn't seem to be really affecting you positively.
Yes, but I think any time one uses a drug, at least the drugs of the order I'm talking about, that should be under a physician's supervision, so that he should be with consultation with the patient, or in agreement with the patient, deciding when doses should be changed, when the drug should be stopped, and perhaps a new drug started.
Okay, well, Dr. Zoll, I want to thank you very much for joining me this afternoon on Fresh Air. It's an interesting and also, of course, depressing topic. My guest has been Dr. Harry Zoll, who is a psychiatrist at the Institute of Pennsylvania Hospital. You're listening to Fresh Air, and this is WUHY-FM in Philadelphia.